Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
The words of the Syrian regime, in our judgment, are simply not enough.
Expectations are high. They are high for the United States, perhaps even more so for Russia to deliver on the promise of this moment. This is not a game, and I said that to my friend Sergei when we talked about it initially. It has to be real. It has to be comprehensive. It has to be verifiable. It has to be credible. It has to be timely and implemented in a timely fashion. And finally, there ought to be consequences if it doesn't take place.
I love Paris in the springtime.
Well, I guess the Secretary of State and Mrs. Ketchup will be flying home soon with a stopover in Paris, which is how it works. You understand they combine business with pleasure. Let me ask you something on the Savage Nation. Already Kerry has rejected Assad's 30-day timetable. I told you yesterday that the game here is so clear to anyone with any knowledge of history, of diplomacy, of deception, of strategy, and what the end game is, that I'm pretty sure in my analysis that Obama's going to bomb no matter what Assad does. He made up his mind, they're going to divide and conquer, and they're going to cut up Syria. For whatever reasons, whether it's the natural gas pipeline, strategic reasons, who knows, they're going to bomb Syria. So already, Kerry has already said, I reject Assad's 30-day timetable. That won't do, he said. Syria said that they'll begin a standard process by turning over information rather than weapons and nothing immediately. That won't do, Kerry declared tonight. And the stone-faced Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov stood there and said, he basically with his face, here we go. Here we go already. Here comes the chess game. So I have two questions for you tonight. First of all, I'm going to talk about Clausewitz tonight. And you never heard of him. It's not a deli on 2nd Avenue in Manhattan. I'm going to talk about Karl von Clausewitz, who said that war is the continuation of policy by other means. And I'm going to really look into, is Obama really following Clausewitz, or has he reversed Clausewitz? Because remember, Obama wanted a bomb first and talk later, which seems to be the strategy of Democrats. Bill Clinton bombed first and then talked to the Serbs later. He also reversed Clausewitz. And now, of course, the Democrats, you could see, are the party of war. But really, is there any difference between the Democrats being a party of war and the Republicans being a party of war? I doubt it. They're a war party. There are what's that simple, military-industrial complex, strategic desires, whatever. I'm going to talk about Clausewitz. I'm going to talk about the new evidence that's come out pointing to Saudi Arabia as having had a role in the chemical weapons attack. I'm going to talk about Obama lying about the numbers of dead from the gas attack. Remember, Susan Rice, the liar, the Benghazi liar, said that more than 1,400 were killed. Obama said Assad's forces had gassed to death over 1,000 people. But the actual numbers on the ground, and by the way, any death is terrible in a war. Death by gas is worse than, I guess, death by a bomb in some ways. You suffer, I guess, longer. But the numbers are much lower than that, according to the Doctors Without Borders. I mean, the numbers are like 450 to 500 people were killed, or 350. So what kind of case can you make when you're lying about the numbers of dead? When the president will just lie about the numbers dead, and no one even knows who fired the gas. We don't understand. Look, inflating the deaths due to nerve gas agents by folding in the deaths due to artillery rounds is something that Kerry knows about, because he was an expert at faking after-action reports going back to Vietnam. He faked the after-action reports as a Riverine soldier. And apparently this is something he does. That's all, he rounds things off to his own advantage. I can ask you a simple question to get the ball rolling on the Savage Nation, which is this. Who won, Obama or Putin? That's question one. Basically, at this point, who won? Who, let's say, who is winning? Obama or Putin, then why? You need to know why. The why is the interesting part of the question. And the second question tonight on the Savage Nation is, will Obama bomb Syria no matter what? Because I think he will. My personal gut feeling is they were going to bomb then because they got backed in a corner both by the United Kingdom teaching Obama that he's actually a member of a government rather than a king, and Russia then coming up with a brilliant chess move. You know, Obama's used to playing, I guess, checkers in Gramercy Park after giving a Marxist speech on a soapbox. That was his lineage. You give a Marxist speech on a soapbox, and then you play checkers in the park. But Putin, I've got to say, is playing chess, apparently. Doesn't matter what side you're on. It's pretty clear to me that we have a novice in the White House, which is the way it's looked to me from the beginning. You know, he's a front man for some various and sundry forces, that's all. Meanwhile, U.S. weapons are being sent to Syrian rebels from your friends in the CIA. This came out of the Washington Post this morning. The CIA has begun delivering weapons to rebels in Syria. Can you believe this? Why are we arming Al-Qaeda? Why did we arm Al-Qaeda in Libya? Why did we arm Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt? Why are we arming Al-Qaeda in Syria? Are you not alarmed? This is like the TV show Homeland already. At this point, it's rising up to the level of the TV show Homeland. Which one of them, shall I ask, is not a double agent? How's that? Now, I'm not asking you which one is the Homeland actor. I'm not asking you which one is a double agent, possibly. I'm asking you which one in Obama's inner circle is not playing for the other side. Because it seems to me they all are. That's what it looks like to an outside observer. Why the hell are we backing Al-Qaeda in Syria? What does he want here? A new caliphate in the Middle East? Well, some would say yes. Some would say yes. That's the interesting question of the night, is it not? So, look, there's no point in getting cute tonight. It's a serious time. I mean, there's a lot going on in the world. It's biblical in its dimensions. It looks to me like we have a Mad Hatter's Tea Party, or worse, running America right now. And most of the people can see through this. Maybe they don't know the details, but they sense something is wrong with the picture. Something is wrong with the whole picture. The phone number here is 855-400-7282. That's the phone number. A lot going on in the world, and I think the biggest story is Syria, no question about it. Meanwhile, we've heard from one of the elder statesmen of stupidity in Hollywood, who has been silent on the war drums of Obama and his minions, Ed Asinine, you know him, the big bumptious Kris Kringle lookalike, the big white beard now, the loudmouth anti-war Ed Asinine, has said nothing. The elder statesman of stupidity is suddenly silent in Brentwood. So let's talk about Carl von Clausewitz. Who is he? He is an interesting and important Prussian general and a very influential military theorist who lived between 1780 and 1831. I always look at the dates and then add up the numbers. I would have been dead already. 1780 to 1831, I do the numbers, 51 dead. So then I asked, did he smoke? Did he eat fat? What was the Prussian diet? Did he jog over the Prussian bridges? Did he have stress? He's dead, that's all, 51 years old, but look, he left a legacy. He is most famous for his military treatise, Vom Kriege. That's the on war, Vom Kriege, translated into English as on war. It was written in 1832. So he made his mark, and he's remembered amongst diplomats for his writings. And the number one statement that is remembered is, war is the continuation of policy by other means. And he says, war is not merely an act of policy, but a true political instrument, a continuation of political intercourse carried on with other means. You hear? He says, what remains peculiar to war is simply the peculiar nature of its means. He's saying, in other words, killing people on the other side is perfectly acceptable as an instrument of diplomacy. But you start with diplomacy first. And then he says, kind-hearted people might, of course, think there was some ingenious way to disarm or defeat the enemy without too much bloodshed, and might imagine this is the true goal of the art of war. Pleasant as it sounds, it is a fallacy that must be exposed. War is such a dangerous business that mistakes that come from kindness are the very worst. I love that line. Did you hear that? War is such a dangerous business that mistakes that come from kindness are the very worst. You know that from business, don't you? You know that from love. You know that from war. You've heard it said that, you've heard it war and peace. You heard love, all is fair in love and war, right? War is such a dangerous business that mistakes that come from kindness are the very worst. And I'm quoting now from Carl von Clausewitz. It's an interesting, I'm not trying to sound, overly intellectual or give you information, but see, everyone quotes things already. Everyone's an expert on certain foreign-sounding names. They use these names like code words in the right wing in order to sound intelligent. They say things like, old stuff, like 2-3 years old. They quote things that I wrote about or that a wall banger has picked up here and there while putting up drywall. He's seen it on the wallpaper. And then they keep repeating the words, the code words of the people that Obama has studied under. Alinsky's dead. Alinsky is dead. Let's never use the word Alinsky again. From now on, you don't say Alinsky to me. That's on the level of playing. Save it for wall banger. If you want to use the word Alinsky, say wall banger. Do you know that Obama and Alinsky? You're going to say Clausewitz from now on. Now you're going to the next level of learning in the world of politics and in the world of manipulation. So I would say Obama didn't read Clausewitz. He did read Alinsky, and he also read Marx, Engels, and Trotsky. There's no question he grew up on it. That was his pablum. That was his pablum. Maybe you were having Jell-O. He was having Trotsky. Maybe you were having popsicles. He was having Lenin. Maybe you were having Diet Coke. He was having Marx. But he didn't read his Clausewitz. Clausewitz, as I said, is a student of war, a theorist on war, and it was written in 1832. It's an amazing book. Of course, I read it in English, not in his original German or Prussian. And he talks about physical courage, and that's a very interesting part of his book on war. Remember, he was a military man. Karl von Clausewitz was a prince, and he became a Prussian general and very influential military theorist. And the things he said are still remembered and read in war colleges and in universities. I would think that of all of the people around Obama that Kerry read it, if he didn't read it, I would say Mrs. Ketchup read it to him in translation, I would think, since she speaks 6 or 7 different tongues. Sometimes she even speaks in tongues. She speaks about continental Africans, and I thought she was talking about continental tires, but when she gave that long speech in continental Africa, that's a great speech. I wish we could find it. We haven't heard from her. But I'm sure she's a good helpmeet to the Secretary of State in his trips in Geneva now, Paris, on the way back. But von Clausewitz wrote this about courage, and I'm going to read it to you because it's so intriguing. Many of you think that courage means just running into a hail of bullets. Well, that's wonderful, but it may not be the highest form of courage. He wrote, "Determination in a single instance is an expression of courage. If it becomes characteristic, it's a mental habit." But he says, but here we are referring not to physical courage, but to courage to accept responsibility, courage in the face of a moral danger. This has often been called courage d'esprit because it is created by the intellect. That, however, does not make it an act of the intellect. It is an act of temperament. Intelligence alone is not courage. We often see that the most intelligent people are irresolute. Since in the rush of events, a man is governed by feelings rather than by thought, the intellect needs to arouse the quality of courage, which then supports and sustains it in action. Well, what does that all mean? Well, I'll let you figure it out. What it means is this. In chapter 3, he writes, "Strength of character does not consist solely in having powerful feelings, but in maintaining one's balance in spite of them." Now, that to me has been my watchword in my entire adult life. Do I live by it? I try to. Do I meet up to that standard? Often, but not often enough. You hear? He says, "With the violence of emotion, judgment and principle must still function like a ship's compass, which records the slightest variations, however rough the sea." Boy, I wish we could all remember that. Strength of character does not consist solely in having powerful feelings, but in maintaining one's balance in spite of them. Now, how does that compare to the hippies running America, whose adage is, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
There's a strange thing going on in America right now amongst people who think and are, let's say, news junkies. Let's put it that way. The evidence that is seeping out has taken an all-around terrible, evil, bad man, Assad, and actually turned him into a victim and turned Obama into a bad guy. Obama has so bungled handling the Assad situation that Obama looks worse than Assad to so many Americans. They're actually backing Putin. And that's actually a tragedy in a way, because Assad is a terrible man. He's an evil man, a purely evil man. He's a mini Hitler along the lines of Ahmadinejad. Ahmadinejad has publicly said he wants to wipe Israel off the map. And frankly, Assad is his henchman. We know this. But in this case, Obama has so mangled everything that he's turned most American people who would have backed deposing Assad years ago into actually supporting Putin, who doesn't want Assad overthrown. Isn't that bizarre? You know, I was searching the index of my book, Trickle Down Tyranny, on the words Arab Winter, which I coined the phrase, and I cited Arab Winter on pages 5, 13, 36, 175, and 199. But in searching through my book this morning for tonight's show, I stumbled upon this paragraph on Sir Obama and the assassination of Gaddafi. And I said it was like a hit by Al Capone, what they did to Gaddafi. And they killed Gaddafi, who was a monster. But like every criminal under U.S. and international law, I wrote, Gaddafi deserved his day in court. Gaddafi was wanted by the International Criminal Court, and I asked, why wasn't he arrested, arraigned, and sent to The Hague for trial? And I wrote this, all of this leads me to believe that he was killed on purpose. Were there CIA operatives on the ground in Libya who were told to kill him if they got the chance? The rebels beat the CIA to the punch. Now we have to ask why they wanted Gaddafi dead. Why did they not want a trial? What did Gaddafi know about higher-ups in the U.S. government, the French government, the British government, that they did not want to come out at a trial? How complicit were officials of the U.S. and Western European governments in the evil deeds of Gaddafi, including the downing in 1980 of Pan Am Flight 103? Even more to the point, I wrote, where was the outcry in the United States against Gaddafi's murder? Now, this is very important, because we descended to the level of the junta in Argentina in executing Gaddafi, right? They assassinated him to cover up what he knew. And I smell a rat with the desire to execute Assad.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hot Talk 560, KSFO.
Dinner, and I almost wanted to vomit. That's
the classy Senator Menendez of New Jersey. I don't know what's with the vomiting. He wanted to vomit. Chris Christie wanted to vomit when he saw the boardwalk caught fire. What's with the vomiting? Have you ever heard of politicians like this? It's like, children, I wanted to vomit. What a statement. I mean, these are not talk show hosts. These are not Howard Stern. This is Senator Menendez, you know, of the distinguished history of Senator Menendez. Remember the little scandal that got swept under the rug because he's a D, not an R. But nevertheless, he wanted to vomit. What vomiting over? What, there was no bombs going to fall? What's the vomit? We should all pause and say, you know what? Let's take a deep breath before the bombs start falling and decide what's at stake here as Americans. What is at stake? Where are the national interests in killing Assad? Where are they? I said he's a terrible man. I said he's a mini Ahmadinejad. We know that. That doesn't mean that we have to kill him, nor does it mean that you should back your government that simply wants to kill people they don't like. What do we have, Al Capone running America? This is like Al Capone. Are we going to descend to the level of the junta in Argentina, where unmarked cars take Americans off the streets, throw back hoods over their heads and disappear them? Because the assassination of Gaddafi gets right to the point of the fears that I have expressed in Trickle-Down Tyranny. And I felt even then, even though he was a bad man, that the murder of Gaddafi should send chills of fear down the spine of every American, regardless of political affiliation or orientation, because you have to ask who's next. And yet few leftists said a single word about the execution-style killing of an unarmed Gaddafi who was begging for his life. Not one word came from MSNBC, mostly snide nonsense by communists. They said nothing, the poseurs. And yet we had the empty skirts, like Hillary Clinton saying, we came, we saw, he died. It's unbelievable to me, the assassination of a head of state. Anti-death penalty liberals supporting the execution of a head of state. Hillary Clinton, we came, we saw, he died. And now we see Madame Defarge from A Tale of Two Cities heckling on the sidelines after celebrating the execution of a world leader, someone who begged to be spared without a trial. You know, it's like the whole world is one Fort Marcy Park to Hillary Clinton. The whole world is like one giant Fort Marcy Park. You remember that one, the death of Vince Foster? Well, let's not go back there, but I believe there is a comparison here. Like Gaddafi, Foster knew too much. He couldn't be trusted to be left alive, so he had to be eliminated. Gaddafi could not be trusted to face trial. He knew too much, so he was eliminated. By the way, it's very much like it was a mob execution, Chicago justice. Al Capone would have been proud. The Chicago thugs who played such an important part in getting Obama nominated and elected and determining the path of his presidency were in their glory when Gaddafi was whacked. Cost us $2 billion to eliminate Gaddafi. Must have been well worth it. But it brings up a larger, more important question. Why did they knock off Gaddafi, and why are they trying to knock off Assad, who was 2 years ago our best friend? And I'll take you back a little further. Remember Saddam Hussein? Did he have a trial? Not a very long one. He didn't have a very long trial, did he? They didn't want him to speak about the gases he got, the weapons he got, the money he got, and who he got it from, did they? So you have to understand that, yeah, I was reading Clausewitz earlier and about, you know, war is a continuation of diplomacy by other means. I understand that. But international relations have always been based upon deceit, bribery, chicanery, and fundamentally buccaneers running the world. I mean, I don't expect my president to be a straight-up person. I never did. Well, you do. You live in that idealistic world that they're all Boy Scouts and Marines. They're not. The reason they rise to such high levels is because they're the best liars, the most silver-tongued, deceptive people on earth who can tell a good story and have people believe them. But that's okay. That's the way the world runs. That's how people rise to the highest levels, whether it's in the military or in politics. The only, and maybe in the universities as well, by the way. You know, it's all politics in that regard. So they want to knock off Assad now. He's the man who knows too much. He's the man who knows too much. But if you look at the history of Assad's Syria, you'll find some interesting things that you should learn before you even take a side. Many of you are too busy. You don't have the time to read this. This is what I do for a living. I've always been very political. Even when I was a young biology student, I was a very political young man at Queens College. I read all the newspapers. I was always fascinated by politics. Why, I don't know. There was no one political in my family, so to speak. My father read newspapers, and he was very interested in the news, but he didn't really discuss politics with me. He read all the different newspapers in New York City at the time. There were six, I think. He had six newspapers at night. He was a man who went to high school only, ran a little store, and he'd read the New York Post, he'd read the Daily News, he'd read the New York Journal American, whatever was it. I said, Dad, why are you reading all these newspapers? They're all the same. He said, no, he said. They all have a different opinion. And I was interested in that. Of course, today they don't all have a different opinion. They're all put out by the same machine. They're the same sausage under different names. They all have the same twisted left-wing view of the world and of America. But things are happening now because of the internet and talk radio. Look what happened in Colorado. The politicians who backed gun control got thrown out of office in a recall election. The first recall election, I think, in Colorado's history, including the president of the Colorado State Senate, they were shocked. They were shocked by it. And today, wait a minute, you say there's no rebound? Today, the cowards in the California State Assembly shelved a gun control measure that would have done the same things that the libs wanted to do in Colorado. They didn't say why they shelved it. So even the one-party communist system in California is cognizant that what happened in Colorado is going to happen here if they keep this up. The American people are not stupid. They're not sheeple on every level. They can be gulled. They can be bullied. They can be lied to. But there's certain things that they're really passionate about. And two of them are God and guns. Let me tell you that right now. And if these communist slime think that they can roll people over on guns, they found out otherwise in Colorado yesterday. And the more they continue to take God out of the schools, the angrier and the angrier and the angrier the people who have children are getting. And that's a lesson that you have to understand. It's not going to work. The American people are a God-fearing people, whether they go to church or they don't go to church. They believe in a higher power, and they believe in God. They don't believe in these empty skirts in politics. They don't. It's that simple. But I'm getting off the track here. I want to stick to the two main questions tonight on the program. I found if I stick to the main themes, I get a better response from you, the audience. Who won, Obama or Putin? And will Obama bomb no matter what? And if you want to follow what I'm saying in more detail, you can read Trickle Down Tyranny. There's 300 talk shows in there for the novices in the field. So if you look at a chronology of Syria, it didn't even exist before World War I. But didn't they? Ottoman rule. Ottoman Empire ruled that area for 400 years. And then after World War I, that area was carved up and Assyria was created. And they named Emir Faisal King of Syria in its natural boundaries from the Taurus Mountains in Turkey to the Sinai Desert in Egypt. Then the French took control in 1920, which is why, strange, you know, Damascus is one of the longest occupied, let me start again. Damascus is one of the oldest continuously inhabited cities on Earth. Do you want to bomb that city? This is beyond belief that the Americans don't even know what they were, that they were cheering. Yes, destroy one of the oldest cities on Earth. It would be like bombing Jerusalem. It's crazy that people don't even know what Damascus and its history is, what it holds, the treasures, the art, the treasures. Aleppo, by the way, is another one of the oldest continuously inhabited cities. You want to bomb Aleppo now? Because so Obama's ego can be solved? It's unbelievable to me. It's like in World War II, what happened? Remember the monastery that the Allied bombers had to bomb when the Germans took it over? I mean, they knew what to take over. The Germans took it over on a mountaintop. One of the great historic monasteries of all time was bombed into ruination by Allied bombs because the Germans were entrenched on top of that mountain, Teddy. And the American mountain divisions could not get up that mountain while the Germans were occupying that castle, excuse me, that monastery. In fact, a formerly great politician, Bob Dole, who lost his soul when he became a politician, in my opinion, was so injured in that assault on that mountain. He was a member of the U.S. Army Rangers Division. He was a great American. He was so injured, he was in the hospital for 2 or 3 years. I loved Bob Dole until he became a whore for China. I was shocked when I wound up seeing that he was a cohort of Madeleine Halfbright and became nothing but a lobbyist for China. It sickened me. But all right, that's a separate story. So what happened? The Allies bombed the monastery. I forget the name of it. I can find it in a few seconds. Destroying all of the great art. And guess what happened? They still didn't drive the Nazis out of that mountain stronghold because the rubble became the greatest place for them to fight a holding operation and a guerrilla war against the assault that followed. So it was to no end. It was a wasted bombing mission. Bombing generally doesn't achieve the goals that military want to achieve. It kills people and it destroys buildings. It doesn't necessarily give you a strategic advantage unless you're hitting a specific military target, which is why I am an anti-war conservative, because I believe that the academic leftists who are running this country are so naive and so out of control. The chicks who run the country, the hysterical college chicks who are talking about bombing, don't even understand what the hell they're talking about. They don't even understand that innocent people will die. All they're interested in is what Obama wants and what the boss will want, and will they move ahead on the pogo stick of the Obama administration and get a cushier job for John Kerry in the John Kerry administration. They have no idea what they're talking about, which is why we need to sweep into power only former members of combat brigades or platoons from Iraq and Afghanistan, Teddy. We must put men who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan into power across the American political landscape, or we're going to be cursed with this academic idiocy, both left and right, incidentally, for the rest of our lives. Now, my dog is very interested in this. Teddy lies on the floor here as I hold forth. He listens to me, and I could see by the tone of my voice that he's opened his eyes from his sleeping, his master's voice. He knows this is very important. Normally, he snores or sleeps during a show. And I know it's on a nice rhythm, the voice is putting him to sleep. But when he sees me getting worked up, his eyes open there on the floor. That's okay, Teddy. That's going to be on. That's going to be on your final exam. Don't worry about it. You got plenty of weeks to prepare for it. So look, we can get all worked up over this, but I personally think it's a done deal. I believe that whoever put Obama in power has decided to break up Syria and kill Assad, and coming to rescue him is his Lone Ranger. The man on the white horse for Assad is Putin. And here's the crazy part. The American people who should rightly want to see Assad deposed are now rooting for Putin. How did that happen? Again, because the academic leftists are so naive, so childish in their presentations, that they've actually turned the villain into a victim. That's what happened. Obama is such a terrible president and such an awful leader that this is why you're starting to say, you know, Putin looks sort of ambassadorial to me compared to this guy. That's all. That's one man's opinion I'm giving you. It's the Michael Savage Show. I am not on television. I don't pump television. I don't tell you to listen to my TV show after my radio show. I will never be on television. I don't appear on television. I don't do live performances. I don't sell you rugs. I don't sell you toupees. I don't sell you bonds. I don't sell you trips anywhere. I don't go on cruises and ask you to come along. What you get is what you get. And I'm supported strictly by my sponsors. I don't need any more. I'm not like these desperate guys who have to sell you, hey, yeah, every day they're selling you something. What is with the selling? Don't they know how it cheapens them? How can their politics be taken seriously if they're selling you floor mats the next second with their name on it, with their face on it? Anyway, just a side note. This is a very strange time we're living through. Tomorrow night is the beginning of the most austere day in the Jewish calendar, and many Christians who are, let us say, Orthodox or religious Christians understand the cycle of Christianity revolves in some ways around the cycle of Judaism. And tomorrow is the Yom Kippur holiday, which is the Day of Atonement, when Jews around the world, even the most secular Jew, even what are called bagels and lox Jews, in other words, like a barber boxer, a bagels and lox type Jew, even she might give up a meal for a few minutes, I would think, tomorrow. Maybe somewhere in the from sundown till sundown, you know, whatever. And what is supposed to happen during the Day of Atonement is what religious Christians do on a fairly orderly basis. They fast and they pray and they beg God's forgiveness and they pray God gives them a good year. That's all well and good. And what, the next day they go back to being the normal human being that they were the day before Yom Kippur? Okay, yeah, well, that's the way it is. I'll never forget. We used to live next to a church in Queens on Utopia Parkway. There's a big Catholic church near us. And I used to like to watch the Christians going into church in the Catholic church on Sundays. There was something orderly about it, and the families were dressed nicely. My father was not a religious man at all, but he was, he was a Russian immigrant, and he was very cynical and quite sarcastic. I wonder where I got it from. And he'd sit there sometimes on a Sunday morning before going to work. He worked 7 days a week. He'd go in a little later because no one came in the store till after one. And he'd open the Venetian blinds. He'd just pick one up and look. And he didn't put anyone down. But he would say with a mirthful smile, he says, you know, it's actually a beautiful thing, that religion that the Catholics have. I said, why? He said, well, you see, they go in there into confession. They apologize to the priest for what they've done. And the minute they walk out, they do it again. He said, it's nice, it's good, I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
So, I would say round one, it's Putin one and Obama zero. So now, Mr. Ketchup is over there, and he's dealing with a judo expert. Who do you think is going to win the next round? You know, a man who, well, whatever. I don't have to put Kerry down. I never liked the man. I always thought he was a liar of the worst kind. I never went for that type of human being, the one who looked down his nose at everybody. You know, that aristocratic look, based on what? What was it based on? What did he do that was aristocratic? So you know what I want to do for a few minutes. I have a few minutes left in this hour. Like tomorrow night, as I said to you, was the Day of Atonement for Jews around the world. Say, well, who wants to hear it? You know what's interesting about it is that there was that show that I loved, The Life of Pi. I couldn't believe that movie. I don't know what genius did it. Astounding. In The Life of Pi, the guy says he was a Hindu, then a Catholic, and then a Muslim. Says, well, how could you go from being a Hindu to becoming a Catholic? And he said, well, he said, when I was a Hindu, the Hindus have 26 million gods, and I was guilty before all of them. He said, when I became a Catholic, there was only one God I was guilty in front of. It was easier. So I thought that was very funny. He had a great sense of humor. Because you have to have a sense of humor with regard to life, death, mortality, God. Don't you think so? So I was looking at the Yom Kippur prayer book, where Jews say to God, please forgive us for all of our sins and transgressions. You have no idea how many sins you commit every day. So they say, for the sin which we have committed before you under duress or willingly, for the sin which we have committed before you by hard-heartedness, for the sin which we have committed before you inadvertently, for the sin we committed before you with an utterance of the lips, that's like whatever word you, for the sin which you committed before you with immorality, hello, and for the sin which we have committed before you openly or secretly, the sin for which we committed before you with knowledge and with deceit, and for the sin which we committed before you through speech, the sin committed by deceiving a fellow man, the sin by improper thoughts, the sin before you by gathering of lewdness, the sin before you by verbal insincerity, the sin we committed you by disrespect for parents and teachers, the sin we committed before you intentionally or unintentionally, the sin by using coercion, the sin by desecrating the divine name, the sin by impurity of speech, the sin by foolish talk, the sin by evil inclination, the sin by knowingly and unknowingly committing sins. For all of these, God of pardon, pardon us, forgive us, atone for us. Amazing. But there's much more. Sins by denial and lying, by bribe-taking, by scoffing, by evil talk, by eating and drinking. Now you understand why Jews are guilt-ridden. From the minute they breathe, they've done something wrong. Proud looks is a sin. Prattle of our lips is a sin. Haughty demeanor is a sin. Just walk around Manhattan, everyone's a sinner. And don't get me started on L.A. My God.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
My city, San Francisco. Love the city. I absolutely love the city. I haven't been there in weeks, but I love it. I like that it's there. I like it there. Every time I want to see like a bum, you know, shooting up in a street, I go to the city. Or I want to see like a violent person begging for money. That if you don't give him any, he curses you out. Yeah, I go to the city for the local flavor and charm. But I haven't been there in a while. I'm starting to enjoy the suburbs more than ever. I don't come over the bridge much anymore. I don't, strange. I don't know if it's me or the city. Anyway, we've been talking about Kerry rejecting Assad's 30-day timetable. I told you who Clausewitz was. I gave you a new thought to stop using already the word Alinsky. Start saying Clausewitz. I asked two questions, who won, Obama or Putin? Will Obama bomb no matter what? I gave you my opinion. I read you some of the sins that the Jews apologize for beginning tomorrow night. And now I'm going to tell you a little story that should make you feel the way Bob Menendez did when he said he wanted to throw up. And here it is. The principal of Concord Carlisle High School in Boston permitted a Muslim poem to be read over the intercom at a Boston school on 9/11, but forbade the Pledge of Allegiance. The principal of Concord Carlisle High School in Boston issued an apology Wednesday after a Muslim poem was recited over the intercom on the 12th anniversary of 9/11, and the Pledge of Allegiance was not. According to Principal Peter Badalament, he said a small number of people were outraged at the poem, which was meant to promote cross-cultural understanding. Apparently, the Pledge of Allegiance was not read because of some confusion. And the principal said, yesterday was the first Wednesday of the school year. We were unaware that our student pledge reader had an internship commitment on this day. What? So instead, they read Moja Kalf's poem called My Grandmother Washes Her Feet in the Sink of the Bathroom at Sears. That's very literate. That's really exciting to tell Christians and Jews and atheists about your grandmother washing your feet in a sink at Sears. No wonder I don't use department store bathrooms. Miss Kalf said respectable Sears matrons shake their heads and frown as they notice what my grandmother is doing, an affront to American porcelain, a contamination of American standards by something foreign and unhygienic, requiring civic action and possible use of disinfectant spray. You're right, young lady. It is piggish behavior to wash your feet in the sink in an American bathroom. That's not how we do it here. It's disgusting, frankly. If you want a foot bath, then go to a mosque and wash your feet. Don't wash them in a sink where people go to wash their hands. What kind of country are you living in? This is acceptable behavior, I ask myself. Anyway, you know, this is crazy, this country. This is what happened under this multiculturalism. What can you say about it? Instead, I'm just going to take your calls on Clausewitz, on God, on sin, politics, whether Obama will bomb no matter what, who won, Obama or Putin. Okay, let's begin with KBET. Rudy, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, thank you very much for taking my call. Let me say, first of all, I respect you, I love you, and I'm a 30-year resident of the Bay Area, and I live in Nevada. Sir, I made a comment to your screener that you talk out of both sides of your mouth, and I don't mean that in any disrespect.
Okay, I'll take it as a compliment.
We can't mix politics and religion. Daniel 2:44. In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be brought to ruin, and it will crush and put an end to.
Wait, your primary point is that we cannot mix politics and religion, but my friend, all of our international politics today are based on religion.
And look where it's taken us, sir.
No, but listen, you're saying we cannot mix politics and religion. I'm telling you that what we are facing around the world is primarily a religious war against our way of life. Why mince words? The radical Muslims are trying to take over the world and convert everybody. How much more do we have to see than what we see?
Can I ask you one question, sir?
Are the Christians trying to convert the world? No. Are the Jews trying to convert the world? No. Are the Buddhists trying to convert the world? No. Are the Hindus trying to convert the world? No. They basically live in peace with their neighbors. And it's a live and let live theory, a live and let live religion. But the Muslim fanatics believe in the single sufficiency of the Quran as the only book the world needs. And so far as their worldview is, everyone must be a Muslim in order for the world to be a peaceful place.
May I ask you a question, sir?
Well, you're asking already. What is it?
Do you think, with the coalition of all the governments of the world through the United Nations, that all religion could be put aside and destroyed?
What, you think that's a good thing?
No. I'm not. No, sir. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm asking you. Do you think that...
What do you mean, that the UN could get together and say, for the sake of peace on earth, all religions are banned?
Yes, sir.
No, I don't think it could ever happen. I think that that's impossible.
Just a question.
I know, but by the way, you're asking a question that's a loaded question. Are there people in the UN who would like to see all religions banned? Absolutely. That's what the UN is. It's a religion unto itself called world government. The United Nations is a world government that's not based upon religion, and they would like to see all religions eliminated. They wouldn't dare. There's too many fanatical religious people on the earth to ever permit that. Number one, take a look at what's going on in the Middle East. So, no, it won't happen in your lifetime. Let's put it to you that way.
Okay.
Yeah, they would like all of us to be speaking Esperanto and basically bowing down to the United Nations building on the East River Drive. But thank you for that sentiment. That opens up a line at 855-407-282. Let's go to the next caller on Syria. And who do you think won, Obama or Putin? Wayne on WABC, Manhattan. Go ahead, please. Wayne, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike. Listen, I'm third generation German-American. My grandfather and father both fought on the side of the Atlantic. I get emails quite regularly from the family that never made it across about Mr. Obama. He's not very well respected. Doug family dynasty is carrying more weight over there now than Mr. Obama is.
Wait, which dynasty does?
The TV show, Doug family dynasty.
Oh. No, Obama is seen as a featherweight. He's seen as a poseur around the world. Very few people respect him anymore. They see that he's, he is what he is. He's a front man, number one, but not a very good one. He has a wonderful voice and a nice suit, but beyond that, no one's buying the act.
The Germans respect Putin because he carries a lot of weight. You can flick a switch and shut off the gas going over into Europe there. But I get a kick from the media over here that tends to make fun of this guy being a loudmouth or whatever. The man is very intelligent. He developed.
Well, let's put it this way: he's a very canny ex-KGB chief. They don't come any smarter than that. And in this round, it's Putin 1, Obama 0. Remember, Putin is a judo expert. So far as I know, Mr. Obama is not a martial artist. I think that he has excelled to a certain extent as a basketball player, amateur basketball, amateur golf. But I think if you put a golfer up against a judo expert, I pretty much can predict who's going to win that match.
You're right. By the way, your book, Time of War, is tremendous. Right.
Oh, you read The Time of War. No one seems to understand what I was saying about our friends from China in that book. You notice how silent they have been with this in this whole Syria situation, and yet in the Security Council they hold a very powerful vote. They and Russia have said no bomb, you know.
Mike, I have a question for you, though. Who is Wallbanger? I'm trying to figure this out. I hear
Oh, you mean who in radio do I affectionately refer to by that moniker?
I have to know. I think I know who the leprechaun is, but the wall banger.
Well, okay. Rush, I affectionately call the golfer because he likes golf and speaks of it often. The leprechaun is no longer in radio because he's only on faux news, and that leaves only one personality who could be the wall banger. Who might that be?
I mean, my guess is Hannity, but...
That's right. The guy with the Lou Costello hairdo.
Gotcha.
And the beauty of Hannity is, as he's gotten older, he's starting to look more and more like Lou Costello. I like Hannity. He's good on television. I mean, if he didn't have radio to promote it, I don't think that he'd have the audience he has. But the thing is that once I came along in his time slot, competing with him head-on-head on, I'm on radio, 9 o'clock Eastern, he's on TV 9 o'clock, I sliced his ratings in half on television. People don't understand what happened to him. It's me.
Yeah.
But I predict that somehow within the next year, this time slot will not be challenged by Michael Savage.
Mike, that's
all I'm going to say. Yeah, thanks for the call. I won't say any more right now. What's this with the pier in New Jersey catching fire? Boardwalk burns. I was trying to enjoy Boardwalk Empire again. I cannot warm up to Steve Buscemi as a heavyweight. He's a good actor. Don't get me wrong. I like him a lot. I liked him as the guy came out of jail and he was a massage therapist, then a half a wise guy and got whacked by Tony with the shotgun in The Sopranos. I can't see him in that role of the head of, the boardwalk thing there, down in the Atlantic City. Firefighters make stand against New Jersey boardwalk blaze. Seaside Park, New Jersey. How does this happen? Who started this one? You can't blame this one on marijuana growers in the forests of Northern California, who almost set the state on fire. They're still trying to say who did it. Everyone knows who did it. The mafia is growing dope in the woods here, but they won't say it. The left won't say that marijuana could ever be attached to anything evil. But who did this? Chris Christie said, I said to my staff, I feel like I want to throw up. What is this with the throwing up in New Jersey politicians? Menendez said he wanted to throw up over Syria, over Putin's op-ed. Okay, now Christie wants to throw up? You know, there is such a thing as gastric bypass for Christie. He could back off a meal now and again. Maybe he wouldn't have that feeling that he got from this. Just maybe a little gastric bypass and cut back on the fries or something. Well, I see we're running a little late on the Savage Nation. It's a certain number of minutes after the hour. It's like 17 after the hour. You can call at 855-407-2822. My mother told me when I was a kid, never talk about politics or religion. Boy, was she wrong. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
And I almost wanted to vomit.
Two New Jersey people, Menendez and Christie, they wanted to vomit. So look, we're talking about heavy-duty stuff, right? I mean, Syria, the Bible. And what are most people looking at? They're looking at the picture of Nicole Kidman knocked to the ground by a paparazzi on a bicycle. They're saying, wow. But you know what I noticed in those pictures? If you look at the Drudge Report, she was at the Carlisle Hotel after a fashion show, and some lunatic on a bicycle, like a paparazzo, was trying to get a picture of her. He jammed into her, knocked her on the ground. Everyone's looking at, like, wow, what legs she has for a 42-year-old. You know, that's the kind of commentary. But you tell you what I saw. I didn't so much see her legs. Here's what I noticed. in the first picture in the panel of Nicole Kidman knocked to the ground that happened today at the Carlisle, her shoes are seen, whatever they are, like $10,000 shoes. There's a label on the bottom of her shoe. Am I the only one who noticed that there's a label on the bottom of Nicole Kidman's shoe? You know what that tells me? No matter how much money these people make, they're still like cheap. They wear the shoes for the event for free, like the $8,000 shoe, whatever it may be today, and they give them back. Who buys Nicole Kidman's old shoes? What, do they refurbish them like a Lamborghini that was driven only once? No, but I know, look at the picture. Look at the panel of pictures of Nicole Kidman on the ground. I actually posted them on michaelsavage.com. I think she's very beautiful, you know, great legs, good actress and all that. She aged well, 42. Get back to me when she's 70, you know. But nevertheless, I mean, look, time and gravity is not kind to anybody. Let me put it to you that way. 40, you could still be in good shape. A 50, you're still in good shape today, maybe. Maybe a 55 or you can get away with. But, you know, after that already, it's time and gravity. It's time to join Greenpeace and start marching for global warming and tie a ribbon around your knuckles. But you look at her shoes, and there's a label on it. Does that mean she's wearing... Ladies, I'm asking you a question. If she is wearing a shoe with a label on the bottom of the sole, does that mean she's giving them back, the old label trick? Or is that she just bought them? Are expensive shoes, do they come with labels? Do really expensive ladies' shoes, like the $8,000, $10,000 shoe, I don't know how a shoe could be that much. I myself wear flip-flops lately. They're better on my feet. I have a pair of like 99 cent... No, I'm wearing Nikes. They cost me like 10 bucks. I found out the best thing for my feet are flip-flops. Nicole fortunately threw her hands in front of her so that she didn't hit her head. Who was this idiot? Carl Wu. BMX bandit Carl Wu was racing to take a photo of the actress when he lost control of his bike. In that picture, there's something else that's culturally interesting to me. Okay, so Nicole Kidman is you know, certifiably gorgeous, right? So who was her personal assistant? A lady who is so out of shape, it's embarrassing. It's like she's with but it's not bad that the personal assistant is out of shape and overweight. Okay, that happens. But she's wearing skin-tight pants, the personal assistant. So why is that? That's obvious why. They have them next to them, so they look better. That's all. The whole thing is interesting. Just as I can look at fashion pictures and draw conclusions, or actors or actresses and draw conclusions, the same with politics. It's very hard to hide things from people who see things as they are. Oh, they airbrushed that picture for sure. But the shoe, look at the picture of the shoe. Can you blow, I can't blow it up on my computer. I want to see what the label says. What, $14.99 at Gimbel's? Anyway, whatever. It's an interesting thing. The world goes on with these people. They're bombing, war, children, gassing, yeah, marching for Obama. The next day they're at a fashion show with rented shoes. 855-400-7282 is the phone number. Nicole Kidman knocked to the ground by cyclist, ambulance called to scene after New York fashion show. That's as big a story to the New York Post as Aleppo or, you know, the gassing of whatever the number is. It's over. It's old news already. Obama used it, and it's like yesterday's news already. There needs to be another gassing with more people in order to make it to Moloch's front page. I don't understand why the boardwalk caught fire. I still, who set that on fire? How did that happen? Who can they blame that one on? That's horrible. You watch Boardwalk Empire? I started to talk about that. It's awful again. The guy with the half a face. What is that with the coming home with the end of it, like a Bergman ending? I'm home. The assassin from World War One with a plastic half face. It's a character, by the way, I liked. What do you mean I'm home? Who's he going home to in that ramshackle, horrible house in Boardwalk Empire? I don't even know why I'm talking about it. Most of my listeners don't have HBO. I talk about Ray Donovan. They don't get Showtime. I talk about Boardwalk Empire. They don't get HBO. Let's face it. People listen to talk radio like things for free. Because the best things in life happen to be for free. That's why talk radio is thriving. It's free. People like it. It's great entertainment. It's great education. It's edutainment. See, in my case, it's edutainment. With Wallbanger, it's the same every day. It's just a nail gun and a nail gun and a nail gun and drywall. Drywall and a nail gun. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
People are asking, why is Obama sending guns to Al-Qaeda? It came out today that the CIA has been sending machine guns and other weapons to Al-Qaeda in Syria. Now, think about this. We're waking up to the news that Obama is actually shipping lethal weapons to Syria. How is that possible? On the anniversary of 9/11, remember what happened on 9/11 and what happened after it? After 9/11, the terror attacks, we engaged in killing Al-Qaeda members. Do you remember that? So now we're giving weapons to those who attacked us? How is it possible? As someone wrote, we all understand that the enemy of my enemy is my friend, meaning our enemy is allegedly Assad, so the enemy of my enemy is my friend, but that doesn't work when the enemy of my enemy is also my enemy. See? Well, Obama didn't, that third part of it he didn't get in Alinsky 103. He may have read the enemy of my enemy is my friend, thinking he's a clever Machiavellian, but he didn't read the next chapter. He was busy doing a doobie, probably, because in the next chapter was written, the enemy of my enemy is also my enemy. Therefore, you don't help the enemy of my enemy in that case. That was the next subparagraph. But I guess he skipped out to go golfing at that point. Does anyone in this country understand what we're doing here? Why are we sending machine guns to the opposition forces in Syria? And I saw John McCain. I'm convinced he's a madman. He is the most, he's like a mad dog of war. Foaming at the mouth today on, where did he go? CNN, of course. That doofus interviewed him. You know, Greg, Jerk Tapper. Who I have to give him a name soon. Oh, he's the great intellectual of CNN now. You'd think he'd ask him like one question, like, wait a minute, you're backing the rebels? Senator McCain, didn't you read that the person who you based this upon was a liar and didn't have a PhD? But instead, Jerk Tapper didn't ask him that, stood there like a dunce. Another, like a Wolf Blitzer without the white beard. Jake Tapper, suddenly the genius who's going to save CNN. You'd think the guy had the ability to ask McCain this. Wait a minute, your whole policy of arming the rebels and getting foaming at the mouth about how wonderful they are was based upon this girl who lied about a PhD and was fired yesterday from the think tank. Doesn't that embarrass you, Mr. McCain? Didn't ask him that. So Jerk Tapper already blew his opportunity to be a serious newscaster. That's over with. Well, anyway, so according to the Muslim sympathizer in the White House, we can't be trusted with guns, but the Muslim killers in Syria can be trusted with guns. They want to take your gun away in America, but they want to give machine guns to the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda in Syria. So Dianne Feinstein wants to limit the number of bullets in your clips, but they want to give them 30-round clips into the opposition forces here. How's that possible? How is it possible that liberals are so insane? Well, no one has the answer. But I wrote the book on the subject, and it was entitled Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. Now, I don't know whether it will live as long as Clausewitz's book on war, but I think that the title unto itself is worthy of immense consideration for a perennial quotation. Liberalism is a mental disorder. And the way it works is this. Whenever a policy makes no sense to you, or what liberals do make no sense to you, you say, how could they do that? How could they play over a loudspeaker in a school in Massachusetts a Muslim prayer and not play the Pledge of Allegiance? The answer is liberalism is a mental disorder. How could a guy like Obama say that guns are dangerous and evil and they should be seized in America and send machine guns to Al-Qaeda in Syria? The answer is always the same. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Well, at least that's how Michael Savage sees the world. Unbelievable to me. It's unbelievable to me. It's beyond belief. It's beyond belief. We're giving weapons to these animals in Syria. There's 100,000 dead in the civil war, and by giving machine guns to the animals in Syria, there's going to be less than 100,000 dead or more. Can anyone answer this? We have gun after gun tragedy in America from lunatics. Connecticut, Colorado, right? So what? By giving guns to Muslim fanatics in Syria, there's going to be less than 100,000 dead or more than 100,000 dead, Mr. Obama? Beyond belief. How in the world does this guy get away with it? Again, to me, by the way, it's beyond liberalism as a mental disorder. The question that's now pregnant in my mind almost on a daily basis is this. You know the show Homeland? Again, another TV reference. Not everyone gets it. They like the free shows. They don't know what I'm talking about. The show Homeland was a great show because it showed something that was quite plausible in a fictionalized form, which was an American soldier was captured in Iraq. He was tortured for 2 years, brainwashed, and he was sent back as a secret double agent. And he comes back as a war hero. The people love him. He's elected to Congress, and he's a congressman. And he's deeply involved in national security affairs, trusted by the vice president. But he's actually a secret Muslim who prays in his basement. His wife and daughter don't even know it until one telling scene when the daughter catches him praying on a prayer rug in the basement, and she's stunned. And then he explains how it's really peace-loving and this, but he can't tell anyone because America's a bigoted country. So the whole show was very, very well done. And the one woman who's on to him is a CIA operative who was told she's insane by the government. Even though she's the only one who knows what's going on, they put her in a mental hospital. But she comes out and she thinks she went crazy. She had a nervous breakdown. She's the one who actually saw it. So now I wake up and I see, wait a minute, Obama has armed the Al-Qaeda and rebel elements in Libya and installed, let us say, warlords in Libya. He's destroyed Libya and turned it into the equivalent of Somalia. Egypt, he overthrew Mubarak, our best ally for 45 years, and he installed the Muslim Brotherhood till the people of Egypt rose up and threw them out. And what happened? Obama and McCain and Lindsey Graham went over to Egypt to try and make sure the Muslim Brotherhood went back into power. How did that work out for Lindsey Graham and John McCain? It's lucky they didn't get lynched in Egypt. Egyptians were marching the street calling Obama a war criminal. Now, in Syria, we have a certifiably bad man named Assad, who's not threatening us, no national security interests, and trying to overthrow him is Al-Qaeda. War-crazy Muslim fanatics from around the world are pouring in, from France, from Germany, from the United States even. Homegrown nuts are there trying to overthrow Assad. So which side are we on? We're with them again. It's just like every day the question to me is, wait a minute, not who is the double agent in the Obama administration. The question becomes, who is not? Which one of them is not a double agent is what's coming to my mind every day now. She said, what about McCain now? How could he be a double agent? McCain is a different case. I've always thought McCain was damaged by the torture by the Vietnamese, and I had great sympathy for him. You know, he has a sympathetic persona. I liked him. I respected him. I looked up to him. And then he started to get stranger and stranger as the years went on. With him, I think it's straight-out stupidity. I don't think he knows what the hell he's talking about. And I know that his nest is feathered by the defense industry and by certain foreign governments, and I figured that explains it all. You know, Lindsey Graham, on the other hand, is a duplicitous individual who is extremely dangerous. I don't think he's a member of, let us say, one of the plants or double agent. Not at all. I don't think he has the guts to be that. Okay, but the Obama administration, the four horsewomen of the apocalypse, how do you explain them? Well, you can say, well, they're not really sympathizers with terrorism. They just want to please the boss in order to move ahead in the government. Okay, so that's not the equivalent? What explains this? Can anyone listening to this show tell me that you're not worried by Obama's actions in Libya, Egypt, and Syria, let alone in this country, where every day before Syria took center stage, the man was out to destroy this country's greatest institutions on a daily basis, one after the other. Whatever it is, whatever he's touched, he was trying to undermine this country, transform it, because he wanted to be a transformational president. Oh, that's always good, transformation? You mean something that's worked for a couple hundred years, that has been really good for the people? You want to transform that into what, Mr. Obama? And I asked that question, what is his model for transformation? In trickle-down tyranny, I asked, what is his model? What does he want to transform Washington into? Beijing? Which country was he modeling the transformation on? He didn't know. He didn't know because it was like a child who takes apart a watch and can't put it back together again. That's what I wrote in my book. The man was a political novice who used catchphrases and gibberish from the university years that got him where he is. Oh, yeah, that's cool. He seems like the right wing saying Alinsky a lot. And the right wing says, oh, Alinsky, you think you were intellectual. What you got to say is Alinsky. And he, oh, well, you're really well-read, man. I read Alinsky. Sounds smart, foreign-sounding. Saul Alinsky sounds sort of commie. So you're really onto something, you know, Saul Alinsky. Wow, you must be really deep, man. You must have read a lot of heavy stuff. You didn't really read a lot. You heard about Alinsky. So you know what Obama's on. It's the same on the other side. Obama's about as facile as right-wingers who say the word Alinsky too many times. What do you think he's really read? What do you think he's basing his transformational ideology upon? Very, very, very shallow literature. Shallow, quite shallow. The code words which got him elected, moved up one stage at a time amongst the idiot left, those code words are still used inside the halls of the White House. I can guarantee you. The whispers in the halls of Congress, the same whispers about these secretive, you know, insights that they have about what the world's going to be if only their crystal ball view of the future were enacted. But we could see the policies already. Mayhem, the arising of a new caliphate across the Middle East. The Arab winter, as I defined it, in trickle-down tyranny. So why is the man permitted to do this? Well, because we don't have a democracy in the country. We have a dictatorship punctuated every 8 years by an election. Let me repeat that if you missed it. America has a strange form of government. It is a dictatorship punctuated by an election every 8 years. Unfortunately, we're in the middle of that dictatorship right now. There's nothing we can do about it. There's no way to get the man out of office no matter what he did. If he woke up and televised himself on a prayer rug and saying he's on the side of Al-Qaeda because he respects them, nothing would happen. Because there's no opposition party. The press is gone. People say, how did this happen? It happened when we lost our press, we lost the country. When you have a facile, empty suit like Jake Tapper, who I don't know where he got the reputation for being deep, is put on CNN and he has the idiot McCain up there, and McCain's foaming at the mouth today about bombing Assad and the rebels, the Free Syrian Army, on and on, and he has the opportunity to say, but sir, it's based upon the fraudulent credentials and the fraudulent editorial that you were quoting the other day, Senator. Don't you understand? He didn't say it, though. We lost our press. We lost the country. That's where it should have happened. That's where McCain should have met the stonewall of a journalist, an Edward R. Murrow, a chain-smoking World War II hero, a chain-smoking Korean War vet, a chain-smoking Iraq War vet, or a chain-smoking Afghan vet who comes back and goes into journalism, but they can't get into journalism. It's run by a few left-wing fanatics who are the gatekeepers of the entire enterprise. You understand why we have such empty suits and empty skirts in the media? Because the controllers want them there. Anyway, you got the picture. But again, this is all one man's opinion. I would say it's an educated opinion based upon facts, or you wouldn't be listening to me this late at night. Remember, this is a late show now. I'm in Siberia. I'm in Radio Siberia, and yet I have a huge audience. You realize that I have a huge AQH for this time of night? It's hard to believe. People turned off Wallbanger and turned me on across America. Why? Because, as Hemingway said, the truth has a certain ring to it. And today, there are so many lies. And there are so many lies and deceits in the media that my voice is so clear and my voice seems so right that it almost sounds more risque than pornography. Pornography has been so mainstreamed in this country. The filth and degradation of the human soul has so penetrated the mind of America that my simple truths without any lewdness are very popular because the truth today is more risque than pornography was 30 years ago. Well, at least that's one man's opinion. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, 53 minutes after the hour. You are listening to The Last Word in Talk Radio every day. Thinking about, you know, Fast and Furious. Remember Eric Holder sent machine guns to Mexico? How'd that work out? Did that reduce deaths or increase them? So now Obama's sending machine guns to the Al-Qaeda and other rebel forces in Syria. Is that going to increase or decrease the deaths? Well, anyway, you know, no matter what Bush may have done or not done right, and he did a lot right and a lot wrong, at least he prosecuted the war on terror, while Obama seems to prosecute the war of error. Write that one down. I just created it for those of you who wait for the last minute of the second hour for the best part of my show. Savage said that Bush prosecuted the war on terror while Obama prosecutes the war of error. That's not bad. You don't have a way with words. I should consider a career in radio. Someone said that to me a long time ago. You know, it really is interesting to turn phrases in the middle of a show. That's something that you can't do very readily unless you can do it readily. You have to understand that. That's something you cannot do readily. It's something you can do if you can do it readily, but you can't do it otherwise. From the war on terror to the war of error in one presidency. But yeah, look, it's a laughing story. You laugh all you want. Being comedic in the political arena is very clever and all of that, but it doesn't get you anywhere. That's because I don't want to go anywhere. People think that talk radio should be a stepping stone to something else, like let's say a TV show on Fox News. Well, that ain't happening. I'm not a TV personality. How about using talk radio as a tool to become a congressman or a senator? That ain't happening. I'm not Sarah Palin. I have no desire to be in politics. How about using talk radio as a stepping stone to forget about it? This is it. This is my last step on the stone. Talk radio is Michael Savage's last stepping stone in the world of work. I'm not going anywhere. I'm never going to do anything else. Although I had an idea tonight of something else, which is I'm probably going to buy a... I swear to God, because I have to go into the whole thing on boating another time, maybe next week. I think I'm going to buy another boat, but it's going to be like a tour boat. I want a paddle wheeler. I want to buy a paddle wheeler and have 7 nights a week a party to go to in a restaurant. I don't want to go to restaurants anymore in North Beach. I want to have my own floating restaurant on a paddle wheeler. And every night you can come on the boat from around the country. There'll be like-minded people on the boat. It may have signs that say liberalism is a mental disorder. You know, stuff like that. I think people would have a blast, you know. And I could come aboard on the nights that I'm available after a show, have a drink, hang out with the crowd. I think it would be a great kick. So I'm going to start looking for a paddle boat, a paddle wheeler. But I don't want a big one. I want something that holds like 100 people. I don't have everything that's going to be on a grand scale. I don't want 500 people on a boat with, well, the economy of numbers, you can't make any money. I don't care. I want like a 100-person boat where I can like walk. It's like a nightclub. Like a nightclub with propellers is what I want. You know, like a floating restaurant nightclub. I think it would be a heck of a thing to have. I like to base it here in the Bay Area. I could do it somewhere else. I'm not going anywhere. This is my last stop. My last stop, I'm going to get it, like put it in Sausalito. Maybe I'll buy an existing paddle wheeler with the existing like crew and the captain. See, that way if I'm putting in an engine or putting in a propeller or having bottom painted, it makes sense because it's like for the business, the paddle wheeler. But what's the point of doing it for a pleasure boat that I'm never on? You have any idea what kind of work is involved in maintaining a boat? You have no idea what it's like. It's endless. It's constant. I mean, it's entertaining up to a certain point if you're mechanically inclined, as I am, and I enjoy all of that. And I like to keep things like new because I was poor when I was young, as I've told you, and I had 3 pairs of shoes, and I'd line them up under my bed and polish them every night. Like, say, what is he, nuts? So he's got OCD. Today it would be called OCD. If the teacher heard I polished my shoes and lined them up under my bed, they consider it a mental defect. In other words, a normal kid today has dirty shoes and filthy clothing and throws them anywhere in the bedroom, and that's considered autistic and creative. It's not how I raised my... I wasn't raised that way, and I didn't treat my clothing that way, and I treat my cars and my possessions the same way. I like everything in order. I like everything taken care of. I like preventative maintenance. In that sense, that's who I am. If you declare it a disease, it's your problem, not mine. So, here we got something new tonight. Bush prosecuted the war on terror, while Obama prosecutes the war of error. Not bad. Hope it's been worth your time. 1 big hour remaining across America in most markets. And to my Jewish listeners, you better pray for forgiveness tomorrow night.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Well, here we are in hour number 3 of The Savage Nation for Thursday, September 12th, 2013. Let's go to michaelsavage.com, home of The Savage Nation, and borders, language, and culture. Here's what I have on my website. U.S. can't prove Assad approved chemical attacks in Syria, according to The Washington Times. Cannot prove it. From the Washington Post, the CIA is delivering weapons to Syrian rebels. What? Now we're helping al-Qaeda? Well, hey, hey! From Agence France-Presse, American jihadi killed in Somalia. Way to go, buddy. Born in Alabama, he was known as the American. Let him rot in hell. Sensitive U.S. military equipment in Libya stolen. You heard about the Million Muslim March, right? Well, it was 25 of them. 25 Muslims showed up, including that moron from Harvard, Cornel West. My God. And what about the bikers, the tens of thousands? Didn't make it into your local rag, huh? A Republican lawmaker says Obama is siding with al-Qaeda in Syria. Duh. He's been siding with al-Qaeda in Libya, let's see, in Egypt, and now in Syria? Well, ask John McCain which side he's on. Meanwhile, a school told a child not to write about God. Child said, he is the reason I'm on this earth. The secular school said, how dare you? CNN poll, Obamacare support collapses. No kidding. Court orders a Muslim girl to join a swim class. Oh my, what a stress that'll be. Putin is shipping Assad more weapons to crush the rebels. So, let's see. Putin is backing Assad with weapons. America's backing the al-Qaeda rebels with weapons. Huh. Why are so many Americans enamored of Putin, I wonder? Well, because our doofus now has a new motto. Talk loudly and carry a limp stick. What else is in the news today on the Savage Nation that we're talking about? Well, let's see. It's Fun Town today. It's Fun Town. Assad is warning Obama, stop arming the rebels. The Drudge Report has pictures of executions by the so-called rebels. Rebels are cruel? No. A New Jersey boardwalk spared by the storm Sandy caught fire. I guess that's what they mean by boardwalk empire. Christie says, I feel like I want to throw up. What's with the throwing up in New Jersey? First it was Menendez wanting to throw up over Putin. Now Christie wants to throw up over a boardwalk fire. I wonder if it's the toxic air coming out of Newark, I don't know. Could be from Goldman Sachs. I don't know where it's coming from. I can ask you a simple question to get the ball rolling on the Savage Nation, which is this. Who won, Obama or Putin? That's question one. Basically, at this point, who won? Who's winning, Obama or Putin, and why? You need to know why. The why is the interesting part of the question. And the second question tonight on the Savage Nation is, will Obama bomb Syria no matter what? Because I think he will. My personal gut feeling is they were going to bomb then because they got backed in a corner both by the United Kingdom teaching Obama that he's actually a member of a government rather than a king, and Russia then coming up with a brilliant chess move. You know, Obama's used to playing, I guess, checkers in Gramercy Park after giving a Marxist speech on a soapbox. That was his lineage. You give a Marxist speech on a soapbox, and then you play checkers in the park. But Putin, I've got to say, is playing chess, apparently. It doesn't matter what side you're on. It's pretty clear to me that we have a novice in the White House, which is the way it's looked to me from the beginning. You know, he's a front man for some various and sundry forces, that's all. Meanwhile, U.S. weapons are being sent to Syrian rebels from your friends in the CIA. This came out of the Washington Post this morning. The CIA has begun delivering weapons to rebels in Syria. Can you believe this? Why are we arming al-Qaeda? Why did we arm al-Qaeda in Libya? Why did we arm al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt? Why are we arming al-Qaeda in Syria? Are you not alarmed? This is like the TV show Homeland already. At this point, it's rising up to the level of the TV show Homeland. Which one of them, shall I ask, is not a double agent? How's that? Now, I'm not asking you which one is the Homeland actor. I'm not asking you which one is a double agent, possibly. I'm asking you which one in Obama's inner circle is not playing for the other side. Because it seems to me they all are. That's what it looks like to an outside observer. Why the hell are we backing al-Qaeda in Syria? What does he want here? A new caliphate in the Middle East? Well, some would say yes. Some would say yes. That's the interesting question of the night, is it not? The evidence that is seeping out has taken an all-around terrible, evil, bad man, Assad, and actually turned him into a victim and turned Obama into a bad guy. Obama has so bungled handling the Assad situation that Obama looks worse than Assad to so many Americans. They're actually backing Putin. And that's actually a tragedy in a way. Because Assad is a terrible man. He's an evil man, a purely evil man. He's a mini-Hitler along the lines of Ahmadinejad. Ahmadinejad has publicly said he wants to wipe Israel off the map. And frankly, Assad is his henchman. We know this. But in this case, Obama has so mangled everything that he's turned most American people who would have backed deposing Assad years ago into actually supporting Putin, who doesn't want Assad overthrown. Isn't that bizarre? You know, I was searching the index of my book, Trickle Down Tyranny, on the words Arab Winter, which I coined the phrase, and I cited Arab Winter on pages 5, 13, 36, 175, and 199. But in searching through my book this morning for tonight's show, I stumbled upon this paragraph on Sir Obama and the assassination of Gaddafi. And I said it was like a hit by Al Capone, what they did to Gaddafi. And they killed Gaddafi, who was a monster. But like every criminal under U.S. and international law, I wrote, Gaddafi deserved his day in court. Gaddafi was wanted by the International Criminal Court, and I asked why wasn't he arrested, arraigned, and sent to The Hague for trial. And I wrote this, all of this leads me to believe that he was killed on purpose. Were there CIA operatives on the ground in Libya who were told to kill him if they got the chance? The rebels beat the CIA to the punch. Now we have to ask why they wanted Gaddafi dead. Why did they not want a trial? What did Gaddafi know about higher-ups in the U.S. government, the French government, the British government, that they did not want to come out at a trial? But I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I got an email with President Putin had to say, and I have to be honest, it was at dinner, and I almost wanted to vomit.
That's the classy Senator Menendez of New Jersey. I don't know what's with the vomiting. He wanted to vomit. Chris Christie wanted to vomit when he saw the boardwalk caught fire. What's with the vomiting? Have you ever heard of politicians like this? It's like, children, I wanted to vomit. What a statement. I mean, these are not talk show hosts. These are not Howard Stern. This is Senator Menendez, of the distinguished history of Senator Menendez. Remember the little scandal that got swept under the rug because he's a D, not an R. But nevertheless, he wanted to vomit. What is he? What vomiting over? What? There was no bombs going to fall. What's the vomit? We should all pause and say, you know what? Let's take a deep breath before the bombs start falling and decide what's at stake here as Americans. What is at stake? Where are the national interests in killing Assad? Where are they? I said he's a terrible man. I said he's a mini Ahmadinejad. We know that. That doesn't mean that we have to kill him, nor does it mean that you should back your government that simply wants to kill people they don't like. What do we have, Al Capone running America? This is like Al Capone. Are we going to descend to the level of the junta in Argentina, where unmarked cars take Americans off the streets, throw back hoods over their heads and disappear them? Because the assassination of Gaddafi gets right to the point of the fears that I have expressed in Trickle-Down Tyranny. And I felt even then, even though he was a bad man, that the murder of Gaddafi should send chills of fear down the spine of every American, regardless of political affiliation or orientation, because you have to ask who's next. And yet few leftists said a single word about the execution-style killing of an unarmed Gaddafi who was begging for his life. Not one word came from MSNBC. Mostly snide nonsense by communists. They said nothing. The poseurs. And yet we had the empty skirts, like Hillary Clinton saying, we came, we saw, he died. It's unbelievable to me, the assassination of a head of state. Anti-death penalty liberals supporting the execution of a head of state. Hillary Clinton, we came, we saw, he died. And now we see Madame Defarge from A Tale of Two Cities heckling on the sidelines after celebrating the execution of a world leader, someone who begged to be spared without a trial. You know, it's like the whole world is one Fort Marcy Park to Hillary Clinton. The whole world is like one giant Fort Marcy Park. You remember that one, the death of Vince Foster? Well, let's not go back there, but I believe there is a comparison here. Like Gaddafi, Foster knew too much. He couldn't be trusted to be left alive, so he had to be eliminated. Gaddafi could not be trusted to face trial. He knew too much, so he was eliminated. By the way, it's very much like it was a mob execution, Chicago Justice. Al Capone would have been proud. The Chicago thugs who played such an important part in getting Obama nominated and elected and determining the path of his presidency were in their glory when Gaddafi was whacked. Cost us $2 billion to eliminate Gaddafi. Must have been well worth it. But it brings up a larger, more important question. Why did they knock off Gaddafi, and why are they trying to knock off Assad, who was 2 years ago our best friend? And I'll take you back a little further. Remember Saddam Hussein? Did he have a trial? Not a very long one. He didn't have a very long trial, did he? They didn't want him to speak about the gases he got, the weapons he got, the money he got, and who he got it from, did they? So you have to understand that, yeah, I was reading Clausewitz earlier and about, you know, war as a continuation of diplomacy by other means. I understand that. But international relations have always been based upon deceit, bribery, chicanery, and fundamentally buccaneers running the world. I mean, I don't expect my president to be a straight-up person. I never did. Well, you do. You live in that idealistic world that they're all Boy Scouts and Marines. They're not. The reason they rise to such high levels is because they're the best liars, the most silver-tongued, deceptive people on earth who can tell a good story and have people believe them. But that's okay. That's the way the world runs. That's how people rise to the highest levels, whether it's in the military or in politics. The only, maybe in the universities as well, by the way. It's all politics in that regard. So they want to knock off Assad now. He's the man who knows too much. He's the man who knows too much. But if you look at the history of Assad's Syria, you'll find some interesting things that you should learn before you even take a side. Many of you are too busy. You don't have the time to read. This is what I do for a living. I've always been very political. Even when I was a young biology student, I was a very political young man at Queens College. I read all the newspapers. I was always fascinated by politics. Why, I don't know. There was no one political in my family, so to speak. My father read newspapers, and he was very interested in the news, but he didn't really discuss politics with me. He read all the different newspapers in New York City at the time. There were six, I think. He had six newspapers at night. He was a man who went to high school only, ran a little store, and he'd read the New York Post. He'd read the Daily News. He'd read the New York Journal American, whatever was it. I said, Dad, why are you reading all these newspapers? They're all the same. He said, no. He said, they all have a different opinion. And I was interested in that. Of course, today they don't all have a different opinion. They're all put out by the same machine. They're the same sausage under different names. They all have the same twisted left-wing view of the world and of America. But things are happening now because of the internet and talk radio. Look what happened in Colorado. The politicians who backed gun control got thrown out of office in a recall election. The first recall election, I think, in Colorado's history, including the president of the Colorado State Senate, they were shocked. They were shocked by it. And today, wait a minute, you say there's no rebound? Today, the cowards in the California State Assembly shelved a gun control measure that would have done the same things that the libs wanted to do in Colorado. They didn't say why they shelved it. So even the one-party communist system in California is cognizant that what happened in Colorado is going to happen here if they keep this up. The American people are not stupid. They're not sheeple on every level. They can be gulled. They can be bullied. They can be lied to. But there's certain things that they're really passionate about, and two of them are God and guns. Let me tell you that right now. And if these communist slime think that they can roll people over on guns, they found out otherwise in Colorado yesterday. And the more they continue to take God out of the schools, the angrier and the angrier and the angrier the people who have children are getting. And that's a lesson that you have to understand. It's not going to work. The American people are a God-fearing people, whether they go to church or they don't go to church. They believe in a higher power and they believe in God. They don't believe in these empty skirts in politics. They don't. It's that simple. But I'm getting off the track here. I want to stick to the two main questions tonight on the program. I found if I stick to the main themes, I get a better response from you, the audience. Who won, Obama or Putin? And will Obama bomb no matter what? And if you want to follow what I'm saying in more detail, you can read Trickle Down Tyranny. There's 300 talk shows in there for the novices in the field. So if you look at a chronology of Syria, it didn't even exist before World War I. But didn't they? Ottoman rule. The Ottoman Empire ruled that area for 400 years. And then after World War I, that area was carved up and Assyria was created. and they named Emir Faisal king of Syria in its natural boundaries from the Taurus Mountains in Turkey to the Sinai Desert in Egypt. Then the French took control in 1920, which is why, strange, you know, Damascus is one of the longest occupied, let me start again. Damascus is one of the oldest continuously inhabited cities on Earth. Do you want to bomb that city? This is beyond belief that the Americans don't even know what they were, that they were cheering. Yes, destroy one of the oldest cities on Earth. It'll be like bombing Jerusalem. It's crazy that people don't even know what Damascus and its history is, what it holds, the treasures, the art, the treasures. Aleppo, by the way, is another one of the oldest continuously inhabited cities. You want to bomb Aleppo now? Because so Obama's ego can be solved? It's unbelievable to me. It's like in World War II, what happened? Remember the monastery that the Allied bombers had to bomb when the Germans took it over? I mean, they knew what to take over. The Germans took it over on a mountaintop. One of the great historic monasteries of all time was bombed into ruination by Allied bombs because the Germans were entrenched on top of that mountain, Teddy. And the American mountain divisions could not get up that mountain while the Germans were occupying that monastery. So what happened? The Allies bombed the monastery, destroying all of the great art. And guess what happened? They still didn't drive the Nazis out of that mountain stronghold because the rubble became the greatest place for them to fight a holding operation and a guerrilla war against the assault that followed. So it was to no end. It was a wasted bombing mission. Bombing generally doesn't achieve the goals that military want to achieve. It kills people and it destroys buildings, which is why I am an anti-war conservative, because I believe that the academic leftists who are running this country are so naive and so out of control. The chicks who run the country, the hysterical college chicks who are talking about bombing, don't even understand what the hell they're talking about. They don't even understand that innocent people will die.
Savage.
So, I would say round one, it's Putin one and Obama zero. So now, Mr. Ketchup is over there, and he's dealing with a judo expert. Who do you think is going to win the next round? You know, a man who, well, whatever. I don't have to put Kerry down. I never liked the man. I always thought he was a liar of the worst kind. I never went for that type of human being, the one who looked down his nose at everybody, you know, that aristocratic look. Based on what? What was it based on? What did he do that was aristocratic? So you know what I want to do for a few minutes? I have a few minutes left in this hour. Like tomorrow night, as I said to you, was the Day of Atonement for Jews around the world. Say, well, who wants to hear it? You know what's interesting about it is that there was that show that I loved, The Life of Pi. I couldn't believe that movie. I don't know what genius did it. Astounding. In The Life of Pi, the guy says he was a Hindu, then a Catholic, and then a Muslim. He says, well, how could you go from being a Hindu to becoming a Catholic? And he said, well... He said, when I was a Hindu, the Hindus have 26 million gods, and I was guilty before all of them. He said, when I became a Catholic, there was only one God I was guilty in front of. It was easier. So I thought that was very funny. He had a great sense of humor. Because you have to have a sense of humor with regard to life, death, mortality, God. Don't you think so? So I was looking at the Yom Kippur prayer book, where Jews say to God, please forgive us for all of our sins and transgressions. You have no idea how many sins you commit every day. So they say, for the sin which we have committed before you under duress or willingly, for the sin which we have committed before you by hard-heartedness, for the sin which we have committed before you inadvertently, for the sin we committed before you with an utterance of the lips, that's like whatever word, for the sin which we have committed before you with immorality, hello, and for the sin which we have committed before you openly or secretly, the sin for which we have committed before you with knowledge and with deceit, and for the sin which we have committed before you through speech, the sin committed by deceiving a fellow man, the sin by improper thoughts, the sin before you by gathering of lewdness, the sin before you by verbal insincerity, the sin we committed you by disrespect for parents and teachers, the sin we committed before you intentionally or unintentionally, the sin by using coercion, the sin by desecrating the divine name, the sin by impurity of speech, the sin by foolish talk, the sin by evil inclination, the sin by knowingly and unknowingly committing sins. For all of these, God of pardon, pardon us, forgive us, atone for us. And while you're all listening, I want you to listen to the idiot McCain in clip 3 talking to none other than John Kerry.
John, do you agree with Dr. Obeghi's assessment of the opposition?
I agree with most of that. They have changed significantly. They've improved. And as I said earlier, the fundamentals of Syria are secular, and I believe will stay that way.
And I think it's very important to point out again, as you just said, it's a secular state. They would reject radical Islamists, and they, in
now,
some cases,
right here.
In the
this is the lie. They sound like a tag team in an ad selling us on global warming while the Arctic ice cap increases in size by 70%. I mean, it's the McCain-Kerry vaudeville act talking about the peace-loving opposition forces in Syria. So now let's listen to the lout, McCain, again talking. Both of them should be impeached for what they're saying. Basing going to war on a lying girl from Georgetown? McCain to Kerry in clip four.
So when we see these commentators say, well, we don't know which side will win, we don't know who the bad guys are, if you agree with this assessment, we certainly know who the bad guys are. Is that correct?
I believe we do for the most part.
Okay. For the most
part. I believe we do, covering his back again. Old Kerry covering his behind. I believe we do. A classic Obama statement. Not we do or we don't. I believe we do. I believe we do. Ooh, I believe we do. Well, the person they were relying upon, Dr. Obagi, it turns out is no doctor, number one. And she's not a scholar. But her writings on Syria, which were published in Rupert Moloch's Wall Street Journal, were relied upon by McCain and Kerry as a prelude to war. I mean, this is serious business. If we had legitimate historians, this would go down as a blemish in the history of American governance. Write that down. It's a good line. America, I like governance. That's a nice word. It's something I would have heard in social studies. Governance. It's a big word. All right, let's take some callers now on the Savage Nation. Kerry on WABC, you're on the program. What's on your mind?
Hi. I am in Manhattan, and I'm a hospital police. I'm with...
Ah, okay. Okay, and what are we talking about?
I'm talking about, first time in my life I've ever agreed with you.
On what issue did I break through to you?
Well, okay, I'll tell you what. You broke through to me on John McCain. It's not that I disagree, I think he's a hero and everything, but John McCain and Lindsey Graham have disturbed me no end. I did not want to go into this war, but I also think that Putin would not have written that letter to the New York Times, and Assad would not have gone on Charlie Rhodes if it hadn't been for the threat of Obama sending in military. Because nobody...
Wait, hold it. Oh, wait a minute. So now Obama's responsible for those actions? Are you kidding? You're basically repeating the Democrat Party line. That's utter nonsense.
Threatening to go in, and he said he was going in before he stopped and decided to go to Congress.
Oh, that's nonsense. Obama was playing golf on Saturday. He's told what to say. You should know, as an intelligent woman, you've seen every kind of con in the world. If you're in hospitals and you're a police person in a hospital, what game have you not seen played?
What game have I not seen? I've seen everything, but I know one thing.
All right, so let's be realists together. We don't have to end this conversation agreeing with each other or hating each other. Do you actually believe Obama's a great war leader, truly in your heart?
I do.
All right, well, you're welcome to your opinion. I just pray to God, I'll stop right there. 855-407-2282 is the phone number. At least we agreed on something, that McCain is an idiot. But do you understand the bigger picture here? That they were relying upon a woman who they called Dr. Obagi, and it came out she was not a doctor, not a PhD. She was simply a flack for the opposition forces. And her editorial was published in the Wall Street Journal, as I said. Again, she gulled the folks who worked for Rupert Moloch, got the editorial published. Here I've written, 28 books. I have a legitimate doctorate from a great university. I've been on the radio for 19 and a half years, and the Wall Street Journal won't even mention my name, but Dr. Obagi, oh, yeah. Dr. Obagi, the warmongers and the immigrant lovers at the Wall Street Journal. If you think the Wall Street Journal is conservative, you're crazy. You ought to read their editorials. They're a bunch of war-hungry, immigrant-loving, when I say immigrant, I mean illegal immigrant-loving public relations people. So don't tell me the Wall Street Journal is a conservative newspaper. It's far from it. But based upon that editorial, which appeared from Dr. Obagi, McCain and Kerry were ready to drop bombs on Damascus. You understand how serious this is? Okay, look, we can move on. There's other stuff to do and to talk about. We can leaven it up a bit. There's another big story. The Million Muslim March in Washington, 25 of the lunatics showed up, including that lunatic from Harvard. another prize, Cornell West. Cornell West, the smirking Cornell West, and his 24 henchmen were at the Million Muslim March, and they're covered by the media as some authorities, while tens of thousands of bikers show up to support America, and they're not even covered by Tom Brokaw and his cohorts in the American media. Tom Brokaw and his clones, let's put it that way. The empty skirts in the media. We're going to go back to the war talk in a minute. I think you're burned out on the war talk, by the way. I get a feeling that you've heard it, you can't take it anymore, and you've moved on. That's my instinct. But before I move on, I want to refer to an article from the 4th of September, which I quoted at that time right here on the Savage Nation. And here it is from the worldtribune.com, Yosef Bodansky. Mounting evidence raises questions about Syrian chemical weapon attack. Let me just hit the highlights. There is a growing volume of new evidence from numerous sources in the Middle East, mostly affiliated with the Syrian opposition and its sponsors and supporters, which makes a very strong case based on solid circumstantial evidence that the August 21 chemical strike in the Damascus suburbs was indeed a premeditated provocation by the Syrian opposition. The extent of U.S. foreknowledge of this provocation needs further investigation because available data puts the horror of the Barack Obama White House in a different and disturbing light. And then he goes into the possible collusion with elements in the U.S. government itself who knew it was coming. But I don't want to go into this right now. What's important in this article is the fact that the Doctors Without Borders group, which is a very left-wing organization, reported they were treating the victims. And they say they treated more than 3,600 Syrians, and 355 of them died. Their number is 355. Obama's number, Kerry's number, McCain's number, mainstream media's number is 1,500. But that's not the important point. Even a few deaths would be serious. Here's the important point. The Doctors Without Borders performed tests on the vast majority of those gassed. MSF Director of Operations Bard Johnson summed up the findings, quote, Doctors Without Borders can neither scientifically confirm the cause of these symptoms nor establish who is responsible for the attack, but they don't believe that they were exposed to sarin. MSF failed to confirm that sarin was the cause of the injuries, failed to confirm. According to MSF, the cause of the injuries could have been nerve agents like sarin or concentrated riot control gas or even high concentration pesticides. Moreover, opposition reports that there was distinct stench during the attack suggest that it could have come from the kitchen sarin used by jihadist groups. This is distinct from the odorless military-type sarin or even from improvised agents like pesticides. Now, there's much more to the article. Mounting evidence raises questions about Syrian chemical weapon attack. Yosef Bodansky, World Tribune. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
So look, we can get all worked up over this, but I personally think it's a done deal. I believe that whoever put Obama in power has decided to break up Syria and kill Assad. And coming to rescue him is his Lone Ranger. The man on the white horse for Assad is Putin. And here's the crazy part. The American people who should rightly want to see Assad deposed are now rooting for Putin. How did that happen? Again, because the academic leftists are so naive, so childish in their presentations, that they've actually turned the villain into a victim. That's what happened. Obama is such a terrible president and such an awful leader that this is why you're starting to say, you know, Putin looks sort of ambassadorial to me compared to this guy. That's all. That's one man's opinion I'm giving you. It's the Michael Savage Show. I am not on television. I don't pump television. I don't tell you to listen to my TV show after my radio show. I will never be on television. I don't appear on television. I don't do live performances. I don't sell you rugs. I don't sell you toupees. I don't sell you bonds. I don't sell you trips anywhere. I don't go on cruises and ask you to come along. What you get is what you get. And I'm supported strictly by my sponsors. I don't need any more. I'm not like these desperate guys who have to sell you, hey, every day they're selling you something. What is with the selling? Don't they know how it cheapens them? How can their politics be taken seriously if they're selling you floor mats the next second with their name on it, with their face on it? Anyway, just a side note. This is a very strange time we're living through. Tomorrow night is the beginning of the most austere day in the Jewish calendar, and many Christians who are, let us say, Orthodox or religious Christians understand the cycle of Christianity revolves in some ways around the cycle of Judaism. And tomorrow is the Yom Kippur holiday, which is the Day of Atonement, when Jews around the world, even the most secular Jew, even what are called bagels and lox Jews, in other words, like a barber boxer, a bagels and lox type Jew, even she might give up a meal for a few minutes, I would think, on a, tomorrow, maybe somewhere in the from the sundown till sundown, you know, whatever. And what is supposed to happen during the Day of Atonement is what religious Christians do on a fairly orderly basis. They fast and they pray and they beg God's forgiveness and they pray God gives them a good year. That's all well and good. And what, the next day they go back to being the normal human being that they were the day before Yom Kippur? Okay, yeah, well, that's the way it is. I'll never forget. We used to live next to a church in Queens on Utopia Parkway. There's a big Catholic church near us. And I used to like to watch the Christians going into church in the Catholic church on Sundays. There was something orderly about it, and the families were dressed nicely. My father was not a religious man at all, but he was, he was a Russian immigrant, and he was very cynical and quite sarcastic. I wonder where I got it from. And he'd sit there sometimes on a Sunday morning before going to work. He worked 7 days a week. He'd go in a little later because no one came in the store till after one. And he'd open the Venetian blinds. He'd just pick one up and look. And he didn't put anyone down. But he would say with a mirthful smile, he says, you know, it's actually a beautiful thing, that religion that the Catholics have. I said, why? He said, well, you see, they go in there into confession. They apologize to the priest for what they've done. And the minute they walk out, they do it again. He said, it's nice. It's good. Anyway, we've been talking about Kerry rejecting Assad's 30-day timetable. I told you who Clausewitz was. I gave you a new thought to stop using already the word Alinsky, start saying Clausewitz. I asked two questions, who won, Obama or Putin? Will Obama bomb no matter what? I gave you my opinion. I read you some of the sins that the Jews apologize for beginning tomorrow night. And now I'm going to tell you a little story that should make you feel the way Bob Menendez did when he said he wanted to throw up. And here it is. The principal of Concord Carlisle High School in Boston permitted a Muslim poem to be read over the intercom at a Boston school on 9/11, but forbade the Pledge of Allegiance. The principal of Concord Carlisle High School in Boston issued an apology Wednesday after a Muslim poem was recited over the intercom on the 12th anniversary of 9/11, and the Pledge of Allegiance was not. According to Principal Peter Badalament, he said a small number of people were outraged at the poem, which was meant to promote cross-cultural understanding. Apparently, the Pledge of Allegiance was not read because of some confusion. And the principal said, yesterday was the first Wednesday of the school year. We were unaware that our student pledge reader had an internship commitment on this day. What? So instead they read Moja Kalf's poem called My Grandmother Washes Her Feet in the Sink of the Bathroom at Sears. That's very literate. That's really exciting to tell Christians and Jews and atheists about your grandmother washing your feet in a sink at Sears. No wonder I don't use department store bathrooms. Miss Kalf said respectable Sears matrons shake their heads and frown as they notice what my grandmother is doing, an affront to American porcelain, a contamination of American standards by something foreign and unhygienic, requiring civic action and possible use of disinfectant spray. You're right, young lady. It is piggish behavior to wash your feet in the sink in an American bathroom. That's not how we do it here. It's disgusting, frankly. If you want a foot bath, then go to a mosque and wash your feet. Don't wash them in a sink where people go to wash their hands. What kind of country are you living in? This is acceptable behavior, I ask myself. Anyway, you know, this is crazy, this country. This is what happened under this multiculturalism. What can you say about it? Instead, I'm just going to take your calls on Clausewitz, on God, on sin, politics, whether Obama will bomb no matter what, who won, Obama or Putin. KBET, Rudy, You're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, thank you very much for taking my call. Let me say, first of all, I respect you. I love you. And I'm a 30-year resident of the Bay Area, and I live in Nevada. Sir, I made a comment to your screener that you talk out of both sides of your mouth, and I don't mean that in any disrespect.
Okay. I'll take it as a compliment.
We can't mix politics and religion. Daniel 2:44, in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be brought to ruin, and it will crush and put an end to.
Wait, your primary point is that we cannot mix politics and religion, but my friend, all of our international politics today are based on religion.
And look where it's taken us, sir.
No, but listen, you're saying we cannot mix politics and religion. I'm telling you that what we are facing around the world is primarily a religious war against our way of life. Why mince words? The radical Muslims are trying to take over the world and convert everybody. How much more do we have to see than what we see? Are the Christians trying to convert the world? No. Are the Jews trying to convert the world? No. Are the Buddhists trying to convert the world? No. Are the Hindus trying to convert the world? No. They basically live in peace with their neighbors. And it's a live and let live theory, a live and let live religion. But the Muslim fanatics believe in the single sufficiency of the Quran as the only book the world needs. And so far as their worldview is, everyone must be a Muslim in order for the world to be a peaceful place.
Savage.